Hello, welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I have a wonderful guest, Ola, and Ola is a really multi-hyphenate. You've done so much in your life and you talk about so much. It was a very difficult thing for me to figure out how to approach this conversation because I know that, and I'm aware that you are, you talk very deeply about many different topics. You're a mother, you're a former tech person, you've been a director at a tech company. You have done so many different things in order to speak about all these things in such a concise manner. You do it in both Vietnamese and English. So welcome to the Vietnamese podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel very honored to be amongst your very, very, very cool guests. And I'm just excited to connect with you as a fellow Viet Kieu. So thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm surprised it's taken this long. And I hope that because we overlap on so many different issues and topics that I hope you come back regularly and, talk about the ways that, you see the world.
I feel even more honored than I was earlier. So thank you so much for that. Yes, I would love to do that.
Can we start by talking about how you got started with content creation?
I was actually writing a script about this today because I'm going to start another new channel. We'll talk about that another time. Okay. But I was working since I was 15. So I had a very privileged childhood and my parents worked so hard, like many of our Vietnamese parents do, our immigrant Vietnamese parents, doing everything to give us the lives that they didn't have. So I grew up not really lacking for anything, materially it was all given to me. And of course, with that came also a lot of pressure to perform and to be at the top of your game 100% of the time. And I'm sure a lot of other Vietnamese kids feel this way where, you have sort of a set number of jobs you're supposed to do when you grow up and you kind of can choose just from those options. And whatever it is, it better be making you a lot of money and giving you a stable life, right? Because these are the things our parents, unfortunately, through our sad history of our country, they couldn't have. So in their minds, this is the way to happiness and this is the thing they want to impart on their children, right? And I took that on very seriously. My parents divorced when I was a kid. Sorry, it's such a long way to answer your question.
We're here for it.
My parents divorced when I was very little. And my mom, she didn't have much, but she gave me a lot of love instead. And so I got like a really nice balance between my two parents of different things. And I always felt like I have to do really, really well and excel very fast so that I can take care of my mom because she sacrificed everything, right? So I felt that weight of obligation and duty towards her. And so I finished high school before I turned 17. So I finished university before I was, I finished high school before I was 17 and I went to university and I kind of was always on this super fast train, the Shinkansen, the bullet train in Japan, like that. I was always on that ever since I was like yay high. And I studied psychology and then I went to the UK and I studied like fashion marketing and I just kept going. And I had so many jobs, like what you were saying, like I've been in so many different industries and in every industry I was on, I was like, I need to figure out how I can get the next promotion. I need to do better. I need to push myself harder. And before I realized, I was a 30-year-old that had been working for 15 years already. And I was about to get promoted to VP at the tech company that I was at. And I was so burnt out because while the pandemic was happening and everyone had time to kind of slow down, the area of tech that I was in, which is immersive and virtual and augmented reality, that was the space that was like booming at that point. I was just like, even on a faster train, right? Like go, go, go. And then I met my husband that year, and he was the first person to ask me, are you happy? And I had never really had anyone ask me that, to like sit down and truly ponder, gosh, am I happy? What is happiness? Because for so long in my head, happiness was being a good daughter. Mm. Happiness was being a good student. Happiness was being a good worker. Happiness was, you know, having the financial means to provide for my mom. And so I never really thought about it. And when he asked me, it felt like he pulled like this thread that like unraveled everything that I knew my life to be. And it was one of those moments where I am so grateful to him that he asked me. And I realized, I don't think I am happy. I don't think I've ever really explored what it means to be happy yet. And I don't think I've let myself tap into certain things like creativity. And so that was the moment where I was like, how can I get myself to a place where I can just experiment with stuff and then figure out what makes me happy, but still like make money because I still need to take care of my mom and I don't want to be a burden to anybody else. So how do I do that? It took me 4 years because I'm very risk averse to like plan my exit and plan how I'm going to do that. And I come from a marketing background. So I was like, okay, let's just give this social media thing a try. And for all the bad sides of social media, there's the good side of, you know, how it democratizes income. There's ways to, you know, explore and be able to make money. So I was like, okay, let's give it a go. And that is the 20-minute long answer to your one question.
You know, it's fascinating because, like so many of us, I think there are so different ways to get to content creation. And we bring with it a bag of experiences from so many different, jobs and professions that we, and you talked about ADHD at some point, you talked about depression, you talked about dating, you know, the 46 guys that you went on dates with and tracked it. There's so much that you offer. And I think that the 20 minute or whatever, it was a 6 minute introduction, but who's counting? I think that it's noteworthy to hear that journey before we understand who we're talking to, you know, today. I'm talking to somebody who's actually been through a lot of stuff. And I think that it's worth diving into before we get started.
Awesome. Thank you for making me feel better about myself. Yeah.
You know, I was wondering in the beginning of my own journey to go into two different directions, both in Vietnamese and in English. And you have chosen to do both languages simultaneously. Can you talk about that? Because you seem to be the same person in both languages. And oftentimes I find people become two different people in each language, like, you know, separate people. Mm-hmm. But you seem to be the same very precise person in both languages. But what's the decision between you know, do the content in both languages?
It's very kind of you to say that, because I think there was a massive gap between who I was in Vietnamese and who I was in English, because I think a lot of us will feel that we grew up in a language that we were most exposed to. So even if at home my parents did speak Vietnamese to me, they were busy working. So the amount of time of exposure and immersion in Vietnamese versus what I got in school outside, the gap was huge. So I decided to learn Vietnamese when I was 10. My grandparents were still alive at that time, and they had sent me like tapes. And I don't know if you remember these books or if you ever used them, but they're like Tiếng Việt. And it's like number one on it. It's like the most basic Vietnamese books that kids use in school. So they used to send me this stuff and I would learn Vietnamese by myself. And I somehow felt like I could never get enough words. Wow. And I'm a really talkative person, as you could tell from my 6 minute intro. So I was like, I can't, there's like a block inside me. And I speak five other languages in which I am able to do that. So I was like, what gives? Like, why can't I be an adult in Vietnamese? And I kind of got stuck in being, you know, like 11, 12. So when I was doing the content, I was consciously thinking, I really want to explore being Vietnamese more. Like, I was 30 and I wanted to consciously, like, dive deeper into my Vietnamese-ness. Like, I was missing it, you know? And I wanted to, like bathe myself in the Vietnamese-ness of things, you know? And I was craving it so much. So I thought to myself, okay, why don't I do a test? And I love running tests, which if we keep talking, you'll see more of. But I was like, why don't I run a test? I'll do some content in English. I'll do some content in Vietnamese and I'll see where it takes me, how I feel. And like, and while I'm going to do that, I'm going to force myself to get better in Vietnamese. So I hired a Vietnamese teacher for myself and a Vietnamese teacher for my husband. And I was like, okay, you learn Vietnamese because you have to do that as my husband. And I'm going to learn Vietnamese so I can get better at Vietnamese, not particularly for the content, but for the growing up part. And the growing up part was such a motivator because I realized my parents were seeing me as a kid, which all parents do. But I was like, particularly when I speak to them in Vietnamese, they don't get to meet adult Ola. They don't know what I really do for work. They don't really know how I view the world. They don't really understand what I think about specific, you know, subjects that just require a bit like more depth and vocabulary, because all I could say was just very basic things. So I got a teacher, my amazing teacher. If you guys are looking for a Vietnamese teacher, I'm plugging her because she's so cool.
For me and my kids.
I'm gonna send her contact to you. Yeah, and we just did online lessons. And I asked her specifically, I was like, I don't want normal Vietnamese lessons. I want you to give me topics that adult Vietnamese people talk about. And I was like, I don't care what it is. Like, talk to me about trauma. Talk to me about psychology. Talk to me about relationships. Talk to me about changes in laws in Vietnam. Like, talk to me about anything that will make my brain work like an adult's brain works, you know, but in Vietnamese, I want that. And then as I kept doing that and I kept doing the content in Vietnamese, I saw the growth on TikTok was insane. Like, people were craving information that they didn't have access to. And I think I saw the biggest growth once I became pregnant. And the geek that I am, I was like deeply researching being pregnant. I was like, okay, like we go through pregnancy because it's like one of the things that just naturally occurs in nature, right? And us women, especially, it's like it's coded in everything in our like entire existence. But what do we really know about pregnancy? Like, what we just take facts as they are. But like, what is the research behind every single thing that happens in pregnancy? So my full-on OCD ADHD just went crazy with pregnancy. And the more I researched, the more I was like, oh my God, this is so interesting. I want to share this with other people. So I would talk about it. And I ended up having to hire a person that would translate my scripts. So I would write them in English with my research and they would translate them into Vietnamese. And this is the big secret, is that I would get someone to just translate my thoughts, right? Because I was like, if I do it in Vietnamese, I'm not explaining anything to you guys. Like, you guys will be explaining things to me. So I was like, I need someone to like know how to say the thing I'm saying in English. And then that ended up being a way to learn more Vietnamese in itself. So it's been kind of like a journey of creation, but more than anything, like learning for me, and so much vocabulary that I could just absorb by, you know, having to read someone else's words in Vietnamese. I mean, it's my words, but translated, you know, like words I lack. So that was really fun. And all the moms, like pregnant moms that had already given birth, they were like, I could tell they didn't have access to this information. And it was really nice to feel so useful and like have a community of people that crave, you know, the same knowledge. And yeah, so that's another 6-minute answer to your questions.
You know, I'm listening to it, but just playing, I'm playing my own experience of consuming your content, the Vietnamese content. And it's a lot more smooth than you're explaining it. It's hard to believe. I'm like, it's so...
It's been a while though. So it's been 2 years, right? It's been two years of practicing and improving a language, right? So I think that's why.
Yeah.
I think that definitely made a difference. I think it's I don't know if you follow this girl called Jessie Jean, but she did this thing called the App Challenge. Anyway, so she has this phrase that she uses. It's like reps over research, and I think that's basically what happened. I kept doing those videos, and I was like, oh my God, my Vietnamese is really improving. And my mom, the other day, my mom was like, wow, you like are having a full conversation with me. Wow. I'm like, you. I was like, yes, this is where I want it to be.
I'm never going to forget that reps over research, because I'm all about research over reps, because it's
same.
It's just laziness, right? We're just like researching because we're just lazy to do the reps, you know?
We're procrastinating, but
it's
part of perfectionism though. That's what it is, right? You kind of hope to make it better before you do something.
And it's avoidant, right? It's just being... avoiding the real work. You got to get into the gym. You got to write. You got to do the work. And you know, there's a creator I just found, Joseph Nguyen. He had an interview with Rick Rubin. He wrote a book. It's basically this idea that we are not who we think we are. And I forget the name of the book. Joseph.
Yes, send it to me, please. Yes, I want to hear the book. Yeah,
and he talks about, you know, when he goes into, you know, I think it's his fourth book, but when he goes into writing, he shuts down and filters out everything and he just does the reps, you know, no more research. We're done. We've soaked in life. We've lived life. And here we are. We're just going to attack this exercise at hand. We're just going to do the reps right now. And I think that's amazing. You know, reps. I'll never forget this, Ola. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Reps over
research. I don't know. That's not even my words. You know, I'm just repeating someone else's words.
It's awesome because, constantly, you know, I just recently got really into painting and,
nice.
You know, and I was like a month or two ago, but I haven't painted. I've just been researching.
Okay. I'm going to, today's July 24th. I'm going to give you 2 weeks to paint something. Okay.
Okay.
I don't want to show it to anyone else, but I want to see a picture of it.
Okay. Fair. So you've got
2 weeks Friday, 2 weeks from now, guys, hold him accountable.
No research. Just pure
no more research. Do it, man. You've got 2 weeks. That's more than enough time. Anything.
And the beauty of research is this, especially when it comes to something that you don't know about, like, painting is something I'm 50 and I've avoided that because my father and my brother were great artists. So I've always avoided it. Like, that's not my domain. Like, speaking is my domain, you know, writing, whatever. I've always thought of myself that way, but not a visual person. So now that I'm researching painting, I've learned so much about process and about living and about, you know, these artists, like, have had these wonderful ways of seeing the world that I just was not privy to. And then now I'm going to museums a lot more with my children. And it's just like, it's opened up this beautiful. So, you know, research is not bad either, but we got to do the reps.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, the thing is, I freaking love research. Like, if I research anything, like anything in my life, I'm there. Like, I'm research. If I get interested in anything at all, you know, I'm going to be giving you a full on spreadsheet. You know, I'm giving you a presentation on things. Like, I'm going to document but that's the problem, is that when you get bogged down in it too much and you don't produce and you're just sitting in your brain, I think that's when we lose the productivity, right? And we lose out on practice.
Yeah.
Because if you're just learning, then you're not really practicing, right? So I think that stuck with me on her thing. I was like, okay, yeah, I need to just do it. Just keep doing stuff and you know.
So I want to introduce to the audience, Ola and I are going to have a new podcast called Reps and Research, where we talk about...
Guys, it's happening right now. You heard it here first.
Oh my God, this is hilarious. Well, all right. We're going to talk about spreadsheets because you brought that up right now. 46 days.
How much time do you have, man?
I got a lot of time. Actually, I have three more podcasts. Today is like my podcast day. It's usually Wednesdays, but I've been, you know, I have three more after this. So, well, cause I only save one day to do all my podcasts once a week. Sense. You know, I'm in that, you know, phase where I could just do all in one day.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about spreadsheet and dating. 46 dates and your husband is number 43. And I want to know what gave you the idea of the spreadsheet and why was he 43? And then there's three more. And how did that process all whittle down to him? And like, I want to know about that. And then the other side of this conversation is something I'm fiercely fascinated about is the idea of dating Vietnamese, dating outside of Vietnamese. This is something I talk about all the time, and I've gotten into some hot water talking about this, but dating happens to be my one of my favorite topics in my life.
Me too, because it's not about dating. It's right. about human psychology, right? It's about connection. It's about so much more than dating. And I feel like dating doesn't do it justice with its name, right? Like the word dating takes away from what dating really is about. It's about humans seeking belonging, right? This is what dating is. You're finding another person that will create enough safe space for you to feel like you belong and they can belong too.
And the problem with people like you and me with our third culture is like there's three cultures going on, the Vietnamese, the you know, the Western, and then the third culture. And that has been the trickiest part of my life. Not to air my laundry, but it's really a tricky thing to do. I'm going to air it out one day in a book, but for the moment, that's the trickiest thing. And I want to hear more about your journey.
Yeah. So 46 dates. So I was living in Mexico and... I was living in Mexico and I went to Iceland for a trip and it was right before the pandemic. So as I was in Iceland, I get a call from my dad and he's like, a pandemic is happening. You're going to get stuck in Iceland. You better leave right now. And so I flew back to Poland at the time to try and figure out, can I get back to Mexico? Like, what's the deal? What's happening in the world? And I kind of got stuck in Poland. And I was working remotely there and I was working on US time while being in Poland. So I had like all the time in the day to do stuff. And I was talking to my friends and they were like, you should try online dating. Like everyone's doing that right now because there's nothing else to do. And I was like, but I'm so happy by myself. Like I finally got to a place where my life is just like, you know, like it's working, you know. The job is working, like I'm working out, I'm eating healthy, you know, I have time to just like read and things were good. Like I like being with myself. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, but you always wanted a family. So like, you know, you're going to be 30 and what are you going to do about that? And I think hearing them say that to me, and not my parents, where, you know, the pressure's always been on. I mean, my parents, by the time I was 29, they were like, no one's going to marry you. It's too late. Like, you know,
gave up.
So it's like, they gave up on me. But I was like, damn, yeah, if I want to do or seriously do have a family, it is definitely the biological clock is ticking. And in my head, I was thinking... 2020, I wanted to move back to Europe anyway to be closer to my family, to spend more time with my parents, because I had left Europe since I was 21. So it's been like nearly 10 years. So I was like, okay, it's time to come back. And the plan was to come back later in the year. But I wanted to come back in a way that I wanted to buy a house in Sicily and then learn the skills to fix things with my hands. So like I wanted to learn plumbing and I wanted to learn like how to, you know, like put tiles on the walls. Like I wanted to learn like really useful human skills, you know, and I was like, how do you fix like stuff when electricity goes bad? Like I wanted to go to Sicily and like become an apprentice to someone and be like, can I please learn these things? And then I buy a €1 house and then learn to fix it up from scratch. And then, you know, that was like an idea that I had. And then I was like, and I'm sure one day I'll be like tile shopping. And also, like, I don't know if you've ever seen tiles in Sicily, but they're so similar to Vietnamese tiles. They use those tiles like on their walls, but Vietnamese tiles that we use on the floor, mm-hmm. there's like, you know, it's so connected. And I think that's part of why I wanted to be there. I was like, one day I'll be tile shopping and then I'll like reach out for a tile and then someone else will reach out for the same tile. And this is like my, you know.
Love it.
This is my Nancy Myers movie, right? I'm going to get that. And all's well that ends well. But I was like, okay, I'm 30. The pandemic's here. We don't know when it's ending. Like, what the hell? Am I getting this tile shop scenario? Like, is it happening? So I was like, okay, go on then. Let me try this out. I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to do this online dating thing. Because I had never done it before, because I completely missed that boat. I was in a very serious relationship. I was engaged. And then it literally just broke off before, like while I was in Mexico, basically. So I had a good time to just be by myself and clear things out. So I was like, do I want to do this again? And the thing is, like, I had a lot of really not great relationships. Minus the one where I was in last, but I was like, there's been a pattern somewhere in my life where I was not dating the right person. And I kept thinking, what is with that? Like, I've done a lot of years in therapy. Why am I not able to find someone right for me? And in a way, the problem was me, because I didn't know how to find the right person. I didn't know how to say what I needed. So when I did this online dating, I was like, okay, let's download Tinder, because I didn't even know other apps existed, right? Like, I was new to this. So I downloaded Tinder and I was like, this is a meat market. Like, what am I doing here? This is so overwhelming. Like, I mean, it's scary out there, and kudos to anyone who does it. And it freaked me out. It really freaked me out. And I was on it for an hour, just kind of like trying to process what the heck's going on. And I was like, I don't think this is for me. So I deleted the app. And as I deleted the app, I should caveat this. I don't know if you're going to leave it in the podcast or not, but I should caveat this that like months before that, just a few months, like a month or so before that, I went on a mushroom trip, my first mushroom trip of my life. Like, that was...
I don't edit anything out. I don't cut anything out. Yeah. But I've done shrooms too, so I can follow this.
So I was like, I went on a spiritual journey. It wasn't like, oh, I went partying with shrooms. Like, I did the whole set and setting thing. And I really wanted to find out a lot of things about myself and how my brain works and why my relationships in my life with everybody, you know, my family, et cetera, are shaped the way they are. And what is there that I can do to improve them, et cetera. So my mind was very like in that state of problem solving, you know? So when I deleted the app, that was my like reaction behavior. But the minute I deleted it, I was like, hold on. This action is connected to some kind of fear. And that fear is the fear of change. And if that fear of change is there, then it is up to me to challenge myself to it. So I was like, god damn it, why did I do mushrooms? I'm like, download it again. So I download it again, but I was like, okay, just apply your systematic thinking to dating, right? Create the method to the madness and set it up in a way that will feel like you can be less afraid, right? Yeah. Like go step by step, so that like create a comfort zone within the discomfort zone that you'll be in. And I love spreadsheets so much. Like, I think they are a great way to organize anything. And I think anything can have a system, and systems are out there to help us if we know how to.
This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan, the sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows, the feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Redboat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together, we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are. Untouched, unfiltered, they're human. So don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com. We got to stop right here. What were the columns in the spreadsheet? And what were the parameters of, like, you know, when you go on a date, did you change the parameters as you went through the system? Or was it a fixed parameter and you're like, all right, I'm going on 50 dates or whatever, and I'm going to keep to the pillars of my columns. Like, how does this work?
This was...
I'm asking for a friend, by the way.
Okay, sure. Actually, I'm about to have a workshop on this, so tell your
shameless
friend.
Shameless plug. Let's hear this. asking for a friend, by the way.
It was 3 months before my 30th birthday. So I was like, 3 months. I'm going to give myself 3 months. And I'm a very intense person. Like, if I do something, I'm going to go full throttle. Like, I'm going to, you know, I think it's ADHD, right? It's like the obsessive mind of an ADHD person. So I was like, I'm going to smash the hell out of dating. Like, dating is going to be my bitch, you know? And I was like... I'm like, how can I make dating the most Asian thing possible? Get a spreadsheet. So I was like, okay, what is it that I'm actually seeking? And the trip that I had on my mushrooms really helped me, like, clarify a lot of stuff in my head. So I was like, I need a system that will help me balance out how emotional I am as a person. Because I feel a lot. And I think just the way I grew up, and I'm sure it has a lot to do with, you know, us not hearing I love you a lot as kids. Like, I went the other way, right? Like, I empathize a lot with people and I love things. Like, I, you know, like, I give all of my feelings to everything. So I was like, I think I spent 29 years of my life loving love so much and wanting to build my perfect nuclear family that I didn't have, that I forgot to figure out what is the love that I'm actually seeking. Like, what is the relationship that I actually want to have? So I was like, okay, how can I balance out all of this with this? So I was like, put this on the spreadsheet, right? And I'm like, let's put down the core values, things that are non-negotiables in my life, things that, like, are live or die for, right? So I was like, what are things that I want in another person that match the things that I live by and that I'm striving to live by? Because I was like, otherwise it doesn't work, right? Because once the chemistry fizzles, what's left, right, is two people that don't really know each other or, like, you know, try to build lives that go in different directions. And I think the fact that my parents divorced and that it affected me so much was like the fear factor driving that, right? Like I don't want to find somebody again and have it fall apart again. Like, if I find someone now, we're getting married. Or I'm going to spend the rest of my life living alone, being happy. That totally cool. But at least I can say I did 200%. So yeah, so core values, I had the columns were my core values. They had numerical values assigned to them. So, like, in terms of importance, so 1 to 10, 10 being the most important. So, like, kindness was 10, ambition was 4. Even though you think, oh, wait, why ambition 4? Like, don't you want someone who's ambitious? Yes, but for example, someone who's diligent and hardworking, that core value was an 8 for me. Because just because you're ambitious doesn't mean you're going to get anywhere, right? Like, you need the hard work, you need the diligence, you need to put in consistency to actually achieve something. So I'd rather have someone who's willing to put their heads down and do stuff rather than just be, you know, dreaming about something big. So So I put all those core values in, and then I created questions. So I created over 140 questions. It was 146 questions that I used to collect my data. So I would go on a date. Obviously, like, I wasn't asking people like, oh, question number three, can you like explain your relationship to your mother for me? Like, it wasn't like that. It was more like a cheat sheet that I could use when I'm out there feeling things, you know, because it's hard to not feel things, whether they're positive or negative, you're feeling things, right? When you first meet people. So I wanted to have a cheat sheet that would help me remember to ask things and to keep my head cool, right? And like to see, do we actually align on where we want to go in life and in love? Or is this just like, you know, we're feeling some kind of attraction towards each other and then, you know, nothing will happen. So that's how I was doing it. I would go, and then if I would go to the bathroom or someone would go to the bathroom, I'd be like taking little voice notes on my phone, like, this is what he answered to this, and then be like, oh, ask a follow-up question, or like, oh, this is... So I would put then a numerical value towards the answers as well to like try and assess if they are really meeting my core values. And the most important thing is like, it's not about judging other people, whether they're good or bad. It's just, are they right for me?
Matching. So those numbers,
those numbers, like, it's not about judging. It's just like, is it match for me, right? Like, are those numbers things that I'm looking for? So that's what I had. And I was so honest about that. I was so honest about doing this. So when I went on my first date, I already talked about it. And I was like, this is what I'm doing. I know it sounds delusional and it sounds crazy. And it's okay if you don't want to keep sitting here on this date, but this is what I need because I'm at a stage in my life where this is what I'm seeking.
When you are going through this, right? The first few that you do, you probably already know that this is not going to work out. Would you still go through with the whole thing just so you can get the empirical data going?
I think so. This system made it so easy to date in a way. Once I became brave enough to actually fully be in it, I at the beginning, I was definitely a lot more like, oh, I feel bad about like not going on another date. And I also tried to control the variable. So I tried to like bring the same Ola to everybody.
Yeah.
Because I was like, otherwise it's like not scientific. I mean, it's not really scientific. Come on. But like,
but it kind of is, right? It really, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, I need to be 100% me, do the same effort for everybody that I'm seeing, because then it's up to them if they want to do the same effort for me. But if I don't bring the same level, then I can't say that they're reacting to the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Because if I come and I'm not interested, then it's, of course, they're going to mirror that. So I had to really force myself to be like, come. And sometimes you don't feel it with someone, right? Like you meet them and you're like, but I was like, okay, just give them a chance. Just do this and try to see if they resonate on your frequency or not. And there was dates, that I would go and I'd be like, this is not going to work. And I would not go on the next date. And once I was brave enough to say no, like this really helped me with my people pleasing. It taught me to be like, no, next. And doing it in a respectful way where you can explain to someone like, this is what I'm after. And I guarantee you there's someone out there that's way better for you because I already know this is not going to work and I'm not going to give you what you need. So, it was hard. It was hard because learning to say no is like, and especially in those kind of situations where you're, you know, you're also vulnerable, right? Emotionally. But it was really rewarding in a sense that once I stopped playing games, because that's another thing that the system required, was you don't play games. You deliver 100% of who you are authentically, shamelessly. And that's the only way to get the other person to deliver that from themselves. And I had two guys that I went on one date with. And on the second date, they would say to me, I really want you to meet my mom. And I was like, first I was like, what? Like, what? Why do you, like, what? Like, at the first guy, I thought, like, what's wrong with this guy? Like, on the second date. But then I realized, oh my God, it's because it's not that I'm special. There's nothing special about me, it's that authenticity and vulnerability have become so rare now in dating where people wait a couple of days to respond to a message. You know, they like, they don't ask what they want to ask. They don't say what they want to say. And that, I think that's the thing they responded to. And I realized that I was like, this system might just work. Like, this system might just make dating actually find me a husband, right? Like, so that was a big turning point for me. And I was like, wow, you know, this is men. Took their, you know, they let go of their guard as well, and they let the guards down, and they were just, you know, a human connecting to another human. And for guys to say, you know, I want you to meet my mother, it's very rare as well. And so they were ready, clearly, to be vulnerable with me, and I appreciated that so much. I did not go meet anyone's mother, but that was really cool.
I think this system and this way of thinking can be applied to so many different things in our life, if we think about it, right? If we can analyze. But before we get to that, I do want to know, were there second dates, third dates, fourth dates that you went through? And was there new systems that you had to build for the second, third, fourth dates?
So I think the system kind of built on itself. So yeah, there was definitely some people that I went on more than one date with, and the system builds on itself because you have so many questions to ask. And the questions that I first started with, they continue, because to really get to know someone, you kind of have to ask over and over again, right? Or like figure it out over and over again. Sometimes they react in one situation in one way, or their answer one way. And then you're still not clear, like, oh, is that really how they live? Or is there more to it? And also it's through observation. So I don't think I necessarily built a different system. I just continued with that. And also there was little things that I would do. So I'm a mega nerd and geek, and I love playing board games. So there was a couple people that got to the board game stage where I organized board game nights with people in my life, like friends or family, and I would observe how they play those board games with me and the people in my life, and how they also interacted with the people I know. And it sounds really simple, because it's just like you're just coming over, like, to hang out, right? Because loads of people do that during dating. But for me, it was really specific, because I was like, games bring out a certain thing in people, right? And it shows who you truly are. And I am so proud of myself that I did that, because there was one guy that I nearly went for. Wow. I nearly had gone for him, and he was just before my husband. And I did Settlers of Catan at my house with my niece and my nephew, and he would not give me wheat. And he would not give me the wheat, guys. So I was like, yeah, I don't think this is gonna work. He was really selfish in games, like, so selfish. And I, like, yeah, you don't, it could be nothing for other people, but one of my core values was generosity. And the generosity to kind of like, that kind of spreads throughout, right? Yeah. And I think in games it's so easy to just be quite selfish, right? Because it's a game. But in games, it's, you don't think people will see who you truly are. But I think in games, that's where your true self really comes out.
No, for sure, for sure. I remember going on a trip, and it was with a bunch of guys. And after the trip, a bunch of guys was like, you know, you turned off a lot of people. It was just all guys. Yeah. And it was a shooting game. I mean, with real guns, and we're out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And they're like, you turned off a lot of the guys that, and I was so blown away when that person said, and he was being honest and truthful. Mm. And he said, the way you compete was a real nasty way. And I was like, oh my God, this is a few years ago. And I really learned from that. I really thanked that person for telling me, because, you know, they were older guys, they were much more, you know, on the social scale, a lot bigger in magnitudes than where I am in my station in life. And they were just like, yeah. And I was like thinking about it. I was like, oh my God, everything he said, Ola, is what you're saying about the games. They were like, they were able to see. And I was the only, you know, I was like 14 guys. I can't remember how many guys, but let's say 10 or 12 guys. I was the only US Marine. I was the only military person. Mm-hmm. I have a history of shooting guns, but yes. I'm not a gun advocate. I don't believe in guns because of my, just my life.
Yes. Yeah.
And just approaching that day or that few times that we went out to shoot, I showed how insecure I was because, if I can't compete with them on the bank account or the what they've done and achieved, then I'm going to show them that that I can shoot. And and technically I can shoot because I was trained to shoot and I know how to breathe when I shoot. But I didn't say any of that. I was just, it was just the way I carried myself and people can read it. And I learned a lot.
That's amazing.
So it's amazing
telling me this now as well. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's such a
I've never told anybody this, but it was a really eye opening and, I really appreciate the person who did tell me and it's, I was not invited back to that, thing. But so listening to you talk about this, we're being watched at all times. And there are these Instagram channels that are dedicated to it's so funny. I don't know how I stumbled into it, but it was because I was watching the art painting ones where I don't know how it introduced me to things that rich people notice.
Uh-huh.
Without wearing the Armani or the Versace shirt.
Yes.
These are small things that people can see that when they're in the super high class, they can pay attention and you don't have, you have no control. You have no idea what they're looking at when they're looking at you trying to level up in their financial sort of level. Right. So the same thing happens, in dating what you did with the games and then, me being invited out to the, this week retreat with these guys. And so there's these subtle things that we don't know. And as we go on and continue living, we can begin to kind of pull back, observe, grow. And from these painful, and that brings me to this thing where I prepared 30 questions for our interview, but I only got to dating with you and I'm still not even done with it, with this dating thing. And I've learned so much from your technical ability to kind of see things, break them down systematically. But you are, you've driven different clips with business ideas, mothering, so many different relationship things, not just with dating, but between interpersonal relationships. I think we're going to have to do this more regularly, Ola. I want to hear.
I mean, we already announced it. I mean, what are you talking about?
Yes, we have to do a sub series. This is fascinating. I mean, the games is fascinating. Okay, but let me finish up with I have so many questions about the games. So how did you end up deciding about your husband? And, I really want to ask the idea. Okay. So two questions.
Yeah.
How did you end up with your deciding that this was the man for you? And then the other question is how much did Vietnamese heritage or being a Vietnamese person play into the decision?
Mm-hmm. Huge. I mean, let me answer the second question first because it was huge for me. And I have a chart of the nationalities that I dated because I was it won't be science if I don't give kind of if I don't take a bigger sample of data.
Yeah, you actually made a clip on dating Vietnamese men. So I'm there's so much going on here. But anyway, I'll let you answer.
I had been dating Vietnamese men most of my life, really. Dated Vietnamese men before a lot more than I dated any other nation. But I think the heritage was huge to me because we were talking about the three cultures, right? The stuff that we grew up with, there's so much ambiguity growing up with so many different things that you kind of don't know who you truly are. There's a lot of do I belong here? Do I belong there? And as I was growing up and I used to live in Vietnam for 6 years, when I turned 21, I went to Vietnam by myself and I decided to stay. So that period really let me kind of understand a little bit more about who I am. And I really liked being Vietnamese. Like, I really appreciate being Vietnamese. And my side of the family on my mom's side is huge. Like, my grandparents had so many kids. So there's like a Vietnamese identity that side of the family constantly kind of updates and upgrades as the next generation moves forward. Like, we're continuing to like edit our own way of being Vietnamese, but it's constant. The fact that we are Vietnamese is constant, and a lot of the kids in our family, even the younger generation, speak Vietnamese. And I think that was huge for me, because I was like, I can't date someone that's not going to understand where I come from. And the Western side, I think, is really easy. It's easier because, I'm in Europe, I'm dating in Europe. Like, people are going to get that. But, like, finding someone who's going to understand that being with family, going to family to meals, or, like, having to see your grandparents every week, or, like, you know, things like that, or, like, taking your parents to the doctors, even though you don't have to, you know, little things that make us Vietnamese, they are so important to me. Mm-hmm. And the reason I moved back to Europe, right? Because I was like, I've been away too far. I don't want to see my parents so little. I want more of that in my life now. So I really was seeking someone who would culturally understand that and who would be willing to learn Vietnamese if they didn't already speak it. So I definitely did date Vietnamese people. I dated mixed Vietnamese people during that time. And then I realized that the Mediterranean culture, Latino and Mediterranean cultures are quite similar to the Vietnamese culture. And I dated a couple of Italian guys, and my husband is Italian. Not only is he Italian, he's actually Sicilian. And the Sicilian culture, which, funnily enough, because I was going to build a house in Sicily, done. The Sicilian culture is so similar to Vietnamese when it comes to those, like, traditional values. And he happened to be someone who also was born in a different place. His parents are mixed, British, Irish, Sicilian. And then he traveled the world. So he's a musical director. Well, now he's a composer and producer as well, but he was a touring musician. So he had been touring since he was 17. So he understands that kind of, shifting home, right? So he got that as well. So when we met, I have to say, you can plan for everything. You can research for everything. You can create systems for everything. And then the universe is going to be like, yeah, okay, whatever. And they're going to you someone, and then you're gonna be like, holy shit, this, like, stretch thrown out of the water. The first date we met, and also, like, listen to this, like, how crazy. Our first date we met was at 10 p.m. and we went on a drive, and we went to a park in London, nighttime. I mean, I have a daughter. I'm gonna give her that as an example of something not to do. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Like, why would you do that? But I also stalked him way before that. Like, I knew a lot about him before I went. So when we met, I mean, to be honest, when we matched already, the conversation was constant. Like, it was not, like, it was like two people that had already been married in, like, an alternate universe. Wow. Like, two people that, like, it was... It's crazy to talk about that. Like, we're 6 years together right now, right? Like, I'm 14 months postpartum. Like, we've just gone through one of the toughest periods of our lives. But, like, I could not be more grateful that that's the person I decided to have a family with, because that system that I had is the reason why I had the easiest, toughest time of my life, is the reason why I'm able to do the work that I'm doing right now. It's all of those reasons. It's... like, the importance of the right partner, like, we don't think about it enough, and how it dictates how our lives goes. So yeah, when we met, I was like 10 out of 10 of everything, because it was just working. I was like, I'm like, what am I? And I had to check myself, because you asked me, why did I go on 46 dates if this guy was 43? I had to check with myself. I was like, is this chemistry that's, like, messing with my brain? Like, how is this guy scoring so high on all of this stuff? So I intentionally went on three more dates to make sure that this guy is actually, meeting the standards or the things that I was looking for, right? Like this is, and yeah, and it I think, I mean, we found the right match. We were compatible, and as we've been living the last 6 years together, everything that we said on those dates and all the stuff we talked about, we've lived that. And it's the most amazing thing to have, because how often are we with partners that we're disappointed with after? Like,
ladies and gentlemen, if you like what you heard from Ola, the dating professional, imagine Ola, the business professional. Stay tuned for our next podcast where we will dive deeper into, I think, dating. We have to keep going because I think that this is so fascinating. But I mean, if anybody's following you online, Ola Polala. O-L-A-P-O-L-A-L-A. And I'm curious how you got that name, but we're going to get into it next, on the next set. We have to do this very soon, because I still have so much about the dating system. Again, asking for a friend. And then we can begin to shift over into the other interesting things. I think you and I definitely share this ADHD sort of, we go all in, we go hard when we get really fascinated by a subject. So I do want to, you know, I want to thank you for coming on today. And, you know, we have so much more to discuss. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation today, Ola. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And I also really enjoyed it. And I also enjoyed or deeply appreciated your moments of vulnerability, because I think those are the moments I live for. Like, I love connecting with people on that level. So I really, truly, truly, deeply enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And to more vulnerable vulnerable moments in our future podcasts.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Ola.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.